Hello, everybody, and welcome to the July 13th, 2015 edition of Weekly Manga Recap. I'm Y Roller of Time, here alongside Rolo T. Chris, how's your head doing, man?
Oh, it's doing phenomenal, Nick. Have you ever had, like, a day at work where you're just sitting at a desk staring at static screens with lights bearing down on you, and you just keep burying your face in your hands? You're like, why, God? Why?
I can't say that I have, Chris.
Oh, well, you are missing out, because it is a treat.
I think I'll just live vicariously through you on that measure. So keep it up, man. I gotta, you know, imagine that I'm in your position staring at nothing.
Well, I'm at the point now where I'm about to, like, just put a sleep mask on my face and I'll just live the rest of the day as Daredevil, just not seeing light. And I'll plug my ears so I'll be, like, an extra level Daredevil. That should make my martial arts twice as strong then, right? If I can't hear or see.
Oh, man, you would have the greatest palate. It would be amazing.
Like, I'm just like, I'm still eating garbage, so I'm still like eating like Papa John's pizza. I'm like, oh, this is awful now that I can taste all the not flavor in it. But it was only $10. Like, it's not even like I enjoy it, just it's cheap. I'm like, it was $10 for a large.
Speaking of comic book stuff, all the trailers came out now. So that's like all people are talking about now. Mm-hmm. And it's like every single trailer that came out, I was like, whatever. Mm-hmm. You can't tell if it's actually going to be good until you fucking see the thing, so who knows.
Well, I'm of the point now where Batman, Superman, like, I'm cautiously optimistic for it. Like, it seems okay. I don't get the Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. That just still seems like the silliest thing in the world to me.
I like how they seemingly responded to, but he's not bald, with him just having super long hair.
Well, it's not even that. I just don't get who he's supposed to be. Like, how is he in this world with control over Batman? That's like what I don't get from the trailer. Like, how is this the puppet master in these things?
He seems kind of like he's the narrator in a Shakespearean play, just kind of explaining things gleefully to the audience as the world crumbles around him, and that's it.
Basically, it's like just a goofy looking character. But I'm gonna call it now. Every scene of Wonder Woman you saw in that trailer is basically her involvement in that movie. It's exactly going to be like Bryan Cranston in Godzilla, where everything you saw in the trailer was basically all of his involvement with that film.
So she just, like, shows up and deflects a blast, and then she just kind of walks away.
Yeah, I think, like, she deflects a blast, gets it, like, she'll show up in the last 10 minutes of the movie, she'll get, like, hit by a blast, something knocked away or something, and she'll just be like, we should form a Justice League, and they'll be like, whoa, and then cut, and credits right there.
Jason Momoa is like already had his entire role in the movie spoiled too. Like, but I don't remember seeing Jason Momoa. No, he was in the background. See, look right here. Let me just slow motion and frame by frame. And there he is, right there, over the third guy in the background's shoulder. There
you
he
see
is.
That toilet flush in the background and a little trident coming out.
That was the work of Aquaman.
Yeah, it's Aquaman doing that. Toilets don't spin that way in America, stupid.
It's because the King of Atlantis willed it to spin that way.
Yeah. He put little planktons in there and told the planktons to swim against the current and made them spin the other way. That's how you know he's there. Batman figured it out. It's like he's a little red detective or anything.
That's why he's so angry. It's because Aquaman is messing up all the toilets. Somehow he blames Superman for it.
He is an absurdly angry-looking Batman in all
he
of those
so
trailers.
He looks pissed off, doesn't he?
It's strange. And you know what? Of all the movies that are, like, all these superhero movies coming out, I think the movie I'm most looking forward to right now is not a superhero movie at all. I'm super excited to see Creed when it comes out. The next Rocky movie, essentially.
Well, it looks like a very serious boxing movie.
Which is hilarious to me, because the entire crux of it is, like, Michael B. Jordan is Apollo Creed's kid, and he grew up without a dad, but you have to reference the fact that his dad lost in a fucking cartoonish boxing match to, like, to an allegory of the Cold War, after hot-dogging it on stage for 10 minutes in front of strippers while James Brown's
in America.
Like, how do you not, like, I want one shot of, like, I remember being there, my dad died. There were strippers' asses shaking around my face as James Brown sang.
like Sylvester Stallone's like, did you watch the match where your dad died? No, man, my mom never let me watch it. I think you should see it. He just watches the whole James Brown performance. Like, so I noticed that this is like, we're at the 2/3 mark. Yeah, it wasn't a long fight.
Yeah, that doesn't last too long. But hold on, James Brown does a split right around here, I think.
Oh, he was the king, man.
Look at your dad, showboy. What a fucking
Oh, man, I miss James Brown, man. Oh, God. Wasn't my dad like your best friend? Shut up!
I have a lot. He's not the only man I dance shirtless on a beach with. Don't you assume things about me?
I still remember that moment. Dun, 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 dun. Wasn't that a different song you danced to? Shut up!
Let me tell you my favorite thing about your dad dying. I got to lift up heavy things to Hearts on Fire from a pretty good song. Hold on, I'll sing it for you. Sturdy fire, shirtless, working out. Where are you going? You didn't pay me for those mozzarella sticks!
We gotta train! We can't train without the music.
Yeah, we need to get some super gay power ballad for you to work out to, although you're already pretty scrumptious, I notice.
Oh, God.
And wasn't this supposed to be Adrian's revenge?
That was just a Simpsons joke.
Was she coming, or should I stop waiting for her?
She died in the last movie. She was dead before the last movie.
Isn't that one of the ones I pretend didn't happen? No, that was the fifth one. Right! I pretend I don't have children.
Yeah, wasn't that movie a dream sequence or something like that?
It should have been.
Right, that's why I train you, is because I like to pretend you're my kid, yeah. My kid I had with the bottle.
you got my chin and all of his blackness. Yeah.
I want a robot to show up in that movie somewhere, too. Polly's robot butler.
This robot's dad knew your dad, too.
I sometimes jump on the beach shirtless with the robot. It's not as weird, though, because he doesn't normally wear a shirt, but sometimes I put one on him just to make sure it's really
accurate.
Just so
he can take it off.
Yeah, and we jump around to a pretty good Survivor song.
Where are we supposed to talk about manga?
I really like our fucking upcoming movie podcast better at the moment.
It really...
Oh, God.
So anyway. So Biomega's next week. I think I both actually read it, but kind of need more time to process it.
I want to give it another read, because it's such a weird series. Like, I still think I'm digesting the fact that I'm just like, I just came into this world and there's a bear with a gun. I need to think this one through again.
Well, one of the first lines you hear is, well, you've never seen a bear before. However, we do actually have a special new manga to talk about as we get into the recap portion, Weekly Manga Recap, beginning with what looks like to be the only Jumpstart series we're going to apparently have, which is Best Blue. Basically, remember that that free Iwatobi Swimming Club anime that came out last year, or maybe the year before, I forget. Yeah, imagine if stuff happened in that series. That's basically what we have in Best Blue.
So you're saying it's a better series than Free off of one chapter?
Stuff happened in it.
Okay, it's not just shirtless dudes who are really hot getting wet.
Well, see, the thing is, you could argue that it is about shirtless dudes who are really hot getting wet. But also stuff happens.
Yeah.
So, I swear to God, like, I think that, like, every Kyoto Animation series that comes out is like, oh, it's the best! It's so well animated! Does something happen? No. Nothing happens. I hate, like, all KyoAni series that come out now. Friggin' Hibike Sound Euphonium getting, like, A++++++++ from all the critics. Nothing happens! It really annoys me! Best Blue.
So angry.
Really?
I don't even know what series you're talking about.
It's about Moai girls who join an after-school band practice, and then nothing happens for, like, the first three episodes before Nick gets bored and stops watching it.
Before Nick slaps his TV off, and you're like, no!
No more! Oh, she wanted to play a different instrument than the euphonium. I learned what euphonium is from this series, and I also learned that apparently people like it when the main character does nothing for three chapters because she's too bummed out at what her friend thinks of her, even though she just kind of has to not apologize and apparently realize that she didn't need to be forgiven in the first place. Oh, this was worth spending 72 minutes on. Anyway, Best Blue, Story 1.
Oh, is it actually called Story 1?
It's called Story 1, Quality of a Swimmer.
Is that becoming like a thing now where all new series have
Well, that's
like...
been a thing for a while.
I just never noticed it. Maybe it's just because I'm so used to only paying attention to One Piece chapter titles, so I'm just like, chapter 783, there you go, made it simple and easy.
Well, even like Naruto, their chapters were titled numbers, and Bleach doesn't actually have a title, it just goes Bleach and then the number.
That's true. Eye Shield was Downs.
Yeah, Downs, yeah. And, you know, having story makes a hell of a lot more sense than page. So, there you go. So, anyway, Best Blue is about this blue-haired kid named Takumi Aono. Let's just call him Takumi, because Aono is going to be annoying as hell to pronounce. Basically, he is a swimmer, and he was inspired by this, like, national finals that he saw several years ago. And so he really wants to swim. He's basically about to graduate from junior high, and so he hears that this guy is going to watch people swim, and so he's like, oh, it's like a coach or a teacher, and so I can learn how to properly swim from him, because he lives on this small island where nobody really swims professionally. And so the guy's like, no, I'm just here to be a lifeguard. And Takumi's like, oh, well, will you still teach me? No. Why not? Because.
Go fuck yourself, that's why.
Because your dream is not something you can achieve. You will never match up to that guy you looked up to. So, you know, don't even bother. And so he's like, oh, well, I'll beat his record and then you'll see. And so he spends basically the entire summer just constantly swimming in the pool where the guy is lifeguarding, trying to beat that record. And he doesn't even get close. I have very little concept of exactly, you know, how much slower he is. But basically, the guy had a time of, like, 48 seconds, and he is, like, getting under 56 seconds at his absolute best, which doesn't seem like a tremendous amount, but in terms of racing, it is basically an eternity for the length that they swim.
I mean, you think about it, it's basically he's finishing, like, a fifth of the time slower, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, when you think of it in terms of proportions, yeah, there you go. But eventually it gets to be the last day, and the guy is, you know, like, I can do it. And no, he like breaks his own record, but he still doesn't even come close. And the lifeguard sister is there, and she's trying to, you know, still be encouraging. He's like, oh, come on, you can do it. And the lifeguard's still like, there's no way that you'll ever match that time, even if you had, you know, 10 more years of practice and you kept on trying that entire time. There's no way you could possibly match it. And so the guy still kind of refuses to give up, and the lifeguard eventually says, look, you can't even join a tournament. You will continue to work by yourself. Isn't that difficult? And yet, why do you want to continue to swim? And Takumi just says, I don't know, but quitting is even more difficult. And at this point, the lifeguard takes off his shirt and jumps in the water, and he says, I am that person that you looked up to 6 years ago. I'm the one who won the national medley. Which, I mean, I think that everyone was calling that, like, from the moment they saw that flashback sequence.
I mean, it'd be like, this big, like, we're adding some mystery, and he's like, it wasn't me, just the dude who also had blonde hair.
It was my twin brother.
It was actually Haruma from Ice Age 21. He's in another series. Wow. Mentor asshole character.
Haruma has hidden talents, apparently.
He's really good at making accurate passes, bluffing, and for some reason, long-distance swimming.
So, the lifeguard, whose name is Sota Kagura, he says, all right, well, I'll show you just what the difference is between us. You know, have a race against me. And he takes off. Takumi tries to catch him. Does not even come close to catching him. But Takumi, you know, still feels like, oh, man, this is what it really is to be a competitive swimmer. You know, it's what a swimmer needs is an endless spirit, and he's the real deal. Doesn't even come close to matching Sota's time. But Sota gets on the phone. And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll accept the coaching position. And he says to Takumi, hey, why don't you come to a school in Tokyo with me, and I'll be your coach there if you pass the entrance exam and get on the team over there. And so basically they're going to train until it's time for the next school year to start, and then Takumi is going to try and become a competitive swimmer with him as his coach. And that is basically where we leave off the first chapter, just establishing what he's going to try to do. In terms of how, like, sports stories go, it seemed pretty standard to me, but I think that it's kind of got its heart in the right place, and it could potentially become interesting.
I liked it a lot, because it reminded me a lot of My Hero Academia's first chapter, mm-hmm. wherein that this is essentially a short story in and of itself that just happens to be the setup for a larger series. I mean, it's sort of something that works a little bit better with sports series, because sports series tend to be a zero-to-hero sort of story, so you don't have to end this, you know, chapter with your hero looking super special awesome. But I think it just goes a long way into telling a story within your first chapter and getting us intrigued, as opposed to being like, here's this character and here's why he's so different from everybody else, and, you know, we're gonna put some, you know, goofy character next to them who will be their, you know, your perception into the world, why, you know, this guy's so strange. But this one's just, here's a kid, he has a passion for this, he doesn't really know why he has it, he just developed it, and he may not have necessarily particular talent for it. I mean, they specifically know, like, yeah, I mean, you may be good, but you don't have any of the right form or any of that. You know, you got a while to go before you're going to be good at this. But, you know, showing that this guy's inspired by this kid's determination and passion for the sport reignites him, it seems like this is a solid premise to work through. And I think it'd be cool to have another sports series in the series, or in the magazine. Plus, if this series stays good, I'd really appreciate having something new to start the recap with, as opposed to Black Clover. That would actually be very appreciated on my end.
Mm-hmm.
So I dug it. I could see potential in this. I thought it was going to be a little more Magic Mikey. Like, I thought they were going to be like, I thought he was going to be like, hold on, let me pick up this pencil over here, or like something like that. But it's actually pretty mild in that. In fact, I actually thought the art was a little bit weak in this series, but overall I think it's very enjoyable.
It's very kind of sharp and standard shonen-ish. It doesn't have a very distinct look.
I was looking more at the chests. Like, you know, I'm the chests.
That is probably the one thing that Free has over this series, is that people will look at those and be like, oh my god, they're abs!
Look at them, they go everywhere.
Let's move on to Black Clover, page 21, Destruction and Salvation. Last time, Asta used his new sword to defeat Mars? That was his name, right?
Yeah.
And then the dungeon started collapsing because they had been having a huge fight underground, so there you go. So everyone on both the Golden Dawn and Black Bull's teams rushes into action. Luck grabs Asta, and they're like, oh, come on, Miss Mimosa, try and heal him. Which actually makes me wonder, oh, no, never mind, yeah. Asta's not immune to magic, it's just a sword, so.
Yeah.
That would kind of suck. He's like, he's injured, heal him, he's immune to magic. Fuck!
It'd be great if his sword just took it from him. That actually would be a pretty interesting twist, though, if his sword's actually, like, absorbed supportive magic, though. Like, so it nullified that. That'd be pretty interesting. Hmm. So he can cut through any magic, but he couldn't be helped.
If it borrows magic, or borrows mana, like it's apparently borrowed Noelle's magic, then it could potentially, unexpectedly, take Mimosa's magic away. So, yeah. If it works that way, which we don't know.
I'm sure it doesn't.
Yeah. Yuno creates, basically, this giant airship, literally, in order for everyone to get on, so that he can rush them out of there. And so everyone's like, oh, we are, yeah, here. And Asta's like, yeah, you have to go save that guy. And it came towards Mars. And, Hans, is that his name? Glasses Dude?
I just called him Glasses Douche. I thought that Glasses was our douche. Canon name for him.
Glasses Douche is like, but he tried to kill us. And Asta's like, we came to capture the dungeon, not to kill enemies. And then stuff starts falling and it gets in their way. It's like, no, we can't do him. Sorry, Asta, bye.
Laters.
They rush out, and everyone's starting to panic because Yuno realizes that Mimosa is too busy healing Asta in order to use her guidepost magical powers. But Luck just says, I'll just guide us. Apparently, he just remembers the way out, I guess. I think it has something to do with sensing electrical paths, maybe? I don't know. So he and Glasses Douche work to deflect all the debris flying on top of them, while Yuno focuses on, you know, flying the ship. And it's actually a really big, you know, nice moment for the side characters to all shine, because, you know, all three of the ones who are, you know, actively working are just like, yeah, we can't let Asta die. We've got to save him and get out of here. And showing their determination, they manage to finally break their way out and get outside. And everyone is safe, basically. Including, as it turns out, Mars, because Lotus, the spoke guy, basically swept in once everyone had skedaddled, made a car out of smoke after hiding behind a smoke screen, stole all the treasure, got Mars, and got them out. So he wins, basically. There you go.
Yeah, he's just like, I got everything, and peaced out, yo. And I saved my friend, too, because I'm not a total dickbag.
So it seems that we've actually got some recurring villains to work with for once, so that's nice.
Are they villains, Nick, or are they really secret heroes?
Well, at the moment, they're antagonists, so I guess we'll see. Mars has this breakthrough revelation recalling a lost memory of the girl that he was with actually seemingly saving his life at the end of their battle by using her recovery flame magic in order to heal him. And apparently with her dying breath, she basically told Mars to go and see the outside world for her. And so Mars wakes up on the smoke car and he's like, I remember everything. Oh. And then he kills...
What? Whoa. Thank you, Skype, for your well-timed internet connection problem. Oh, dear. Nope, Skype's hanging up on Nick. You had to find a way to make this even more inconvenient today, didn't you, Skype?
Hello!
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, a little bit of a internet blurp, apparently.
You were so excited when it happened, too. What happened?
I don't know. I think that I was just building up to the fact that Yuno and Asta are okay, and they're arguing over being the Wizard King. So, yay! Bleh.
It's been a whole 10 minutes since that's presumably happened, Nick, so it's pretty important they reestablish that these two both want to become Wizard King, but they're both pretty friendly about it.
Right. Then at the very end, Glasses Douche, a.k.a. Klaus, grabs both Asta and Yuno and gives them a big hug, and he apologizes because he was looking down at them. He's like, oh, I wouldn't acknowledge you because you were peasants. I'm so sorry. You're both excellent magic knights of the Clover Kingdom. And that's basically where we end.
And that's where Nick was like, fuck, this character's ruined now. Yeah. He showed empathy towards another person.
So, honestly, I mean, like, I like the side casting to do a bit of stuff and seeing a bit of development with them and, you know, how some of their thoughts on Asta and Yuno have changed, but then, like, Asta and Yuno, like, woke up and just had their argument.
And they talked, and you're like, ugh.
Why did they want to save this kid again?
Yeah, I liked what we got from that, and I liked that we got something out of Mars and, what's Smokey guy's name?
Lotus.
We got something out of them to make both of those guys seem more interesting, like, oh, hey, we're gonna do something with this, presumably, like, this is gonna go somewhere beyond this. And again, it was a chapter that didn't focus much on Asta and Yuno, so I liked it in that regard. But I just said, once they wake up, you're just like, oof. Like, now I remember why I appreciate a chapter without you two so much.
Right.
So, also, the chapter ends with, I assume it's Mimosa being like, Noelle, your clothes are kind of shredded. I'm like, how would she not notice this?
Well, she had kind of been mortally wounded and was in the heat of battle and stuff.
I know, but like, come on.
I think that there was just more important stuff to focus on. And then she looked at it, like, oh god, you're right!
You're like, oh, everything's gone.
But yeah, I mean, a pretty good chapter overall, I would say. So.
Who did she slap? Wait, no, she slapped somebody.
I assume that she slapped Asta, because...
I mean, yeah, I mean, he would be the right one, I guess.
He would have to be the default choice for that, yeah.
That'd be, like, an interesting dynamic you just suddenly add on to fucking Yuno. Like, he's just a weird pervert on top of it. He's quiet, but he just makes
weird... Hey, Noelle, your clothes are all torn up.
He's Mr. Plinkett from the fucking Star Wars of yours. Like, hey, your shorts come off.
I was more going for Sonora Card Gage from the Strong Bad shorts, but you can go Mr. Plinkett, too, I guess.
I like this version of Yuno. Not because he's weird. He's just suddenly got so much more character.
Yeah.
He's just like, hey, did you see that thing of treasure that none of us got? That was kind of a bummer.
Hey, lady, I'm going to be the Wizard King.
Well, my best friend will. One of us will.
Actually, he's kind of a cool guy, too. You should come meet him with me.
Yeah.
You could say that, you know, if I introduce you as my girlfriend, you know, it would be kind of cool, too.
You know what? I've heard people like Menage a Trois with me. Really good friends. If I don't pay attention to you, though, that's just because he needs a lot of love. It's like, this got so weird and uncomfortable so quickly.
Weekly Manga Recap, making all your favorite characters and non-favorites into weird gay stalkers.
Where are you going, Al?
Alright, let's move on to Bleach, 634.
Speaking of gay stalkers.
Yeah, seriously. So, the fight between Bazby and Jugo continues. Bazby now sporting giant wound in the chest. He's finally like, hey, maybe I should actually stop fucking around and actually use my powers. And it's like, Burner Finger 4! And someone's basically a giant blade of fire. Swings it around and tries to attack Jugo, who uses his full name! Oh, how dare he!
Holy shit, he went a fucking parent on you. He's like, Blazard Eugene Black! Get back here!
Blazard Black, you put that flaming sword down right now!
I love that all of the Quincy's have stupid names, even when they get their real names revealed. Like, it's like, Bazby wasn't, like, a goofy enough name. It's like, no, his actual name's Bazard Black, though. I'm like, why wouldn't you pick something better to go with than Bazby as your nickname? Like, BB, or, like, B squared, or something. I don't know.
Wasn't that what Bull Buchanan got called when he was John Cena's bodyguard?
Yes. Yes, he was. He was B
squared. Yeah! Obscure obscure early 2000s wrestling reference. Go! Now I'm from this planet. Can't actually do a recap on this.
What do you got to do?
So, Bazby still remains confident for some reason, even though, you know, he's losing. And it's like, oh, are you scared of losing to me, Jugo? Flashback. Apparently, in his early career, Bazby just kept on trying to challenge Jugo to a fight, and Jugo was just like, no, the Stern Ritter fight against each other is punishable by death, so I'm not gonna fight you. Bye.
There's this thing, he's like, I just die, bye. He just walks away.
Bazby doesn't even like have something smart to say that. I'm not gonna fight you. No.
He's just like, oh.
Then some random guy, I'm sure we've seen this guy before.
I think he was the guy from last week, where the guy was walking around and Bazby challenged him to a fight.
So he was like, oh, it must be annoying to have that new guy, you know, trying to start something with you. Maybe you don't command enough respect as a leader. And he goes like, I guess I'll try and follow your example then, Lieutenant Commander Hubert. I'm sure he said Hubert because, like, your name's stupid.
Your name's Bazard.
No, that's his Jugo.
Oh, Jugo's doing it.
Jugram Hochwald is...
That's actually a pretty pimp name, yeah.
That's way better than Hubert, I have to say. No offense to anyone of our listeners who happens to be named Hubert.
As, like, Hubert Trump is listening to this right now, like, how dare they?
Hubert is like, oh, that's that monkey from a while back, isn't it? I'll beat some airs into him. And Jugo is just like, in fighting within this turner is punishable by death. Well, but if nobody's watching, then not even His Majesty will find out. Jugo's just like, I'm watching. Which is kind of creepy.
Yeah, he's like, oh, like all the time? Like even when I'm pooping? Especially when you're pooping.
You should really get that checked out, man. I mean, it's not supposed to be that color.
It's supposed to be one solid group, not several. You're not getting the fiber.
I mean, I've heard of, you know, green poop, but, you know, like, blue? No. That's bad.
Something's wrong here.
So anyway, Bazby basically indicates, oh, it's been 3 years since you began serving Jugo Bak. And by the time I was able to join after trying for 3 years, you were already the commander of the Stern Ritter. Or maybe you were the commander from the beginning. I wasn't there then, so I wouldn't know. Anyway, you kept ignoring my challenges over and over, no matter how many times I taught you. I love how that detail is just thrown in. Or maybe you were the commander for the gang. I don't know, I wasn't there.
Yeah, well, whatever.
So, you know, just like, oh, you never fight me. You son of a bitch, fight me. I still haven't lost to you. Not yet. And then the president, Jugo, cuts off Bazbee's arm. Increase the counter. And so Bazbee's like, oh, I better get super serious now. Burning full fingers and use all five of his remaining fingers. And he's thinking to himself, maybe I should have used this while I had all 10 fingers. Then, you know.
Does he actually say that to himself?
No,
that would be fucking funny as shit.
Because he doesn't say burning five fingers, he says burning full fingers. So it's like, so would this have been more effective if you just, like, used all 10 fingers then?
And it's weird because, like, they've made a big deal out of Bazbee. Like, I remember he fought on par with,
Hitsugaya, yeah.
Hitsugaya, like, he's one of the few remaining members of them. They obviously cared enough about him to give him this flashback. Like, it was a huge deal. He used, like, three fingers at one point, and he uses five fingers, and Hoshwald just, like, walks past him. It's just like, shink, you're dead. Really? Later.
We don't even see, like, exactly what happens. Like, I think that he... It's really hard to tell what happens. I think that you can see the remnants of the flaming explosion past him, so Jugo just basically responded by just, like, going around it and cutting him.
Yeah, he's just like, you know, it's like a straight line. It's kind of easy to dodge. Like, my only weakness!
If only I had a second arm so I could have pointed at you after you dodged! Maybe, as it turns out, having an attack so reliant on having an arm... isn't such a good plan in Bleach.
Remember the Alamo. I mean, what a weird character trait to give him at the last moment.
Shut up, I had a mohawk in ancient Germany. Or wherever the fuck they were.
That was some kind of ancient cowboy German soldier ghost thing.
Punk. So, Bazbee, like, just with his last strength, this grabs onto Jugo's shirt, and he's like, oh, damn.
Notice me! Senpai!
Oh, you win. Things don't always go the way you want them to, do they? And Jugo's like, oh no, I mean, things have gone pretty well for me my whole life. I thought losing to you would sting a lot more. Oh, okay. So he's not too mad or upset? Whatever. Yeah. And, you know, with his, like, I guess last breath, he just remembers when Bazzy tried to make Jugo his minion, and they said they'd be the best quizzes, and then he just, like, his eyes close, and Jugo just walks away from him. So, I guess he's dead now. I mean, like Unohana, and never
dead,
coming back.
Dead and never coming back. Now, did I make some sort of prediction that this was going to happen the chapter, basically, after the flashback ended?
He would die? Yeah.
Okay. Did I put money on it or anything?
We didn't put money on it because we never put money on anything.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I was like, I'm not up for anything, am I? Like, I'm not going to, like, owe money if he does, like, comes back, like, a week later. Like, I'm still alive. Let's make out, Yurubak, or something stupid like that.
We should probably... Maybe we should, like, in the future, like, do waiters, like, having to do something. As some sort of punishment. I don't know, like, having to read something aloud or something like that. I don't know.
I mean, Nick, I've read my erotic fan fictions out aloud. What else is there really for me to read?
Yeah, what else is there? But yeah, I mean, it was... Bazbee just, like, wasn't very interesting in the end. I mean, it was like, he thought more of himself than he really was, and that was basically it. And this whole flashback was really meant to establish just how Jugo, I guess, is connected to Yurubak and what his powers actually mean. And it probably took longer than it should have in order to establish all that. Jurgum is strong, but, you know, he's Yurubak's, you know, second in command. I guess that was kind of, you know, expected. And we didn't really get to see too much of what he could actually do, because all he really did was, you know, use sword techniques. That was basically it.
Yeah, I mean, we know he's the B for balance, and it seems to be that whenever Yurubak's asleep, he gets his powers, essentially.
Which he didn't. He didn't really demonstrate any of them.
Yeah, so, I mean, unless that was, you know, his jump move was like, that's the Almighty at work or whatever. I just didn't grow seven eyeballs to show it off or whatever. But, yeah, no, it was kind of a weird flashback to get into, because we kind of had this impression that the Sternritter who were left behind had all been betrayed by Yurubak. You know, it was you know, classic shonen villain, I don't care about my antagonists, you know, but my minions, I'm going to let some of them die because they're worthless to me. So you kind of start to feel for them, at least in a slight bit, that they're like, oh, our lives are essentially worthless right now. So you kind of go under the impression of like, well, we're going to try to sympathize with these characters as much as possible because they're now working for the, you know, we're with the good guys to fight, you know, our big bad here. But then you do a flashback that's entirely painting Basby in the bad picture. Like, he doesn't come off as good in any of the parts except for part one. You know, outside of that, you're like, oh, wow, this guy's actually a huge dickhead who's really jealous that his friend is getting a slight bit of attention more than him. So it's just sort of a strange little thing in Basby's character arc where he goes from being a super strong Sternritter to being angry that he's been betrayed to then being found out, like, oh, he was planning to betray them all along, and maybe he still was, or eventually he just came to be like, I guess I'll just hang out with them. It's not really clear exactly that. And then to be like, oh, he's also kind of a dickhead in the past. I'm kind of glad he's dead now because he really didn't have that much to add.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of something when you have the, you know, big long flashback to build sympathy for a character and then it does absolutely none of that.
Yeah.
Do we have a fairy tale this week?
There is no fairy tale as of the current moment because we are recording this on Monday. Fairy tale usually comes out on Tuesday, so at the moment.
We'll probably have to double up at some point. In the meantime, let's move on to Food Wars Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 126, Booth Battle Strategy Session. Basically, the first day of the festival wraps up, and there's a big old announcement over all of the booths that are doing super well. For example, the Boar Research Society that, I always forget her name. Nikumi, that was it. It's weird because you've got Nikumi and then you've got Nikiri, so, eh. So, I guess, you know, shows that she has had a really strong influence over them, and, you know, the president's like, oh, you're on the verge of closing, oh, it's so good now. But they actually established that Skewer guy that Soma defeated in Shokugeki, he's actually done really well for himself as well. And also, the Aldini brothers have actually had the best booth in their area. So building up them as well. And then they're like, oh, and in Center Campus, you know, there were these guys that we don't even bother showing their faces. And then in first place, Kuga with the Chinese Food Research Society. And so everyone's like, oh, I guess someone didn't do very well. And then people are passing, like, newspapers around, and they include all of the data on, you know, just all the rankings and stuff. And it points out that of all of the different booths, there are two that are actually currently in the red. One is Soma, and the other is the Shiomi Seminar, which is Alice's trio.
And all five people who are in the red are Fall Classic finalists.
So all of...
Or Final Eights.
So a lot of the first-year students, you know, Erina and Megumi and Hayama and Kurikiba and Alice, a whole bunch of them meet up, and Erina is so pissed off. It's like, what are you doing? You're making a mockery of the Fall Classic. What's wrong with you?
How did you all fuck this up?
I love how much she cares.
And I love how immediately Todoroki's like, oh, I'm sorry. She's like, well, I wasn't directing this at you, per se. Like, she still has that friendship with her. So she's like, well, not you. It's everyone else from Mangra.
It's Soma asshole's fault.
It's that Soma asshole and his hot friends.
Oh, you think I'm hot, cousin? No, not you. I hate you.
Are you sure? There's some delightful fanfics to be written.
Like, totally.
Yeah, like, oh, so, yeah, and oh my god, and,
talking like that.
Kesha had to have some kind of catchphrase, didn't she? STDs in California!
What the fuck?
I assume that was Kesha's catchphrase.
So, Hayama is, like, complaining to Kurikiba. He's like, oh, man, she kept on, you know, sticking her fingers and everything. She kept on changing our menu every other minute right up until yesterday. That's why we got all these ingredients we don't need. And Kurikiba just says, what are you talking about? She's probably going to keep changing it every other minute through the whole festival. And I was just like, what? So, yeah, things not working out too well, I guess, in the marriage between Alice and Hayama. I guess Kuriki was kind of used to working with her, but, yeah. So, everyone is just kind of, like, you know, pointing out, like, oh, you guys are in trouble, especially, you know, Soma. So, you know, Nakumi says, you know, you guys are going to, you're both going to get expelled, you know, if you don't get somebody out of the red. And then Soma finally shows up and he's like, I'm sure everything will work out in the end. And it was like, where the fuck have you been? And he's like, I was off running a few quick errands. By the way, are you hungry? Would you like some black pepper pork buns that I made with today's leftovers? And Nakumi is like, how could you be so laid back? And I was just like, I'll have one.
Give me. Is it full of STDs in California?
What?
It's my catchphrase. It's Cash's catchphrase. I made it my catchphrase.
I think you do that voice a little too well. I kind of realized something over the course of the past week, and that's that Soma's not really... he's kind of a typical shonen protagonist, but at the same time, he's really just more of an eccentric genius than anything.
He's also a super big asshole.
Well, yeah, it's just he's not really cool unless he, you know, puts his, you know, headband on or anything like that. And he doesn't really have incredibly strong morals a lot of the time. He's just kind of going through his school life. The thing that makes him stand out as a character in his own universe is just that he's kind of oblivious, but things work out for him because he's an eccentric genius. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of at a school full of eccentric geniuses, in a way. And he just... it's kind of weird that he manages to stand out that way. Anyway. So, everyone is, you know, kind of freaking out over all this, and they're like, I mean, you know... seriously, you're kind of in trouble, you know? And, Arina kind of points out, you know, once the line started forming in front of the Chinese Food Research Society's booth, it just kept growing and growing, and before long, nobody even bothered to look at your little car across the way. Or I guess Megumi says that, anyway. And she says, you know, it's a shame, though, too, because, you know, your pork buns are really tasty. You know, if we could just attract more customers, they would do really well. So, someone's like, oh, let me look at the rankings here. Oh, look at all those people on the council who are in the tops, and the, you know, top rankings, and we get this, like, whole... full-page spread of rankings on the slopes where Arina was positioned, and she did number two, and like everyone surrounding her and like the entire top seven basically is one of the council members, and they actually draw specific attention. Oh, the fourth seat, Momo, was number one, and the first seat was only number five. So you're like, oh, that's kind of weird. But Arina just, you know, just points out, you know, people are just using different techniques for this stuff. For example, you know, my booth is reservation only. Some people have, you know, open reservations and stuff. Some people hold their stuff outdoors. So it's kind of like, this doesn't necessarily equate to your skills specifically as a cook overall. So that's the main point. And of course they're like, oh, Soma's dead last in the center campus and the Xiaomi group's dead last in Main Street. Yay! And I love how Alice is like, it looks like you're in the basement. And I was like, yeah, with us. So Aaron is like, I mean, I have no idea how you can be worried about other areas. You need to concentrate your energies on center campus and finding a way to beat Kuga Senpai. And Soma says, do I? He's just like, eh. He has a plan. Which, I think, as we basically find out, goes back to the mobile card idea, which, you know, this is why he's actually scoping stuff out in other areas, is because he's gonna go there. So there you go.
Makes sense.
Megumi, at one point notices that there actually apparently weren't very many leftovers in their booth, which basically, I guess, is meant to indicate that Soma actually kind of predicted that this is about as well as they were performed, although he was just a little bit off. They did only a little bit worse than he thought that they would. And then, at night, Soma hands a key to someone through a door. A shadowy, mysterious figure. Who do you think is the shadowy, mysterious figure, Chris?
Bigfoot. Let me go through all the characters I know in this series and pick them from there.
How many do you actually know?
Who was the guy at the French restaurant that Soma cooked at a while back? Shunsui? Was that his name?
No, you're thinking of the captain of the divisions in Bleach.
Oh, okay.
Shinomiya was his
Shinomiya.
Name.
I think it's Shinomiya, Nick.
I'm pretty sure that wasn't him.
All right, give me a second chance to guess. I think it's the fat Aldini brother.
Maybe? I don't know.
This character, I don't even know his name.
Yeah, it has more of a chance that than Shinomiya, so...
Sweet.
And before they go to bed, Sim also mentions that he wants to discuss something with Megumi. And then we just cut to the second day. Kuga is still carrying on, selling tons and tons and tons to all of his customers. And then the day basically ends, and he looks in the newspaper to check how Soma is doing. He's like, oh, he's risen from dead last up to 35th for the second day. So he's like, oh, I guess the guy tried a little harder today. Oh, hey, have you guys seen him at all? No. What? Well, I saw him earlier, and he had a few more customers. And he was also offering this, like, noodle dish of some kind. And then we cut to elsewhere, where now Sadatsuka, who I don't think you have seen really before, Chris.
Nope.
Okay. Well, actually, you saw her in a couple of montages. Basically, during the festival, she had this showdown with Hirato. Hisako, not Hirato. Hisako.
You know who Hisako is.
Arina's assistant.
Oh, okay.
Because basically, now is like, I want Arina-sama to notice me! And so her specialty in cooking was basically, it smells incredibly foul, but it somehow still tastes good. And so she's got this whole macabre, gothic, voodoo sort of theme to her character. And she, like, cursed people and so on and so forth. And then because Hisako kicked her ass so incredibly hard during the festival in their showdown, instead she has a crush on Hisako instead of Arina. And that is all that we have seen of her so far. Until now, when people are like, oh, she's got her weird thing, yeah, and they're like, didn't she want to open on Main Street instead of here? Yeah, but there would have been stink complaints. So, yeah.
That's a thing, stink complaints?
But anyway, as now closes her little booth down for the day, she sees Soma hauling the cart around, and that's basically it.
Interesting, Nick. Mm-hmm. What do you think's going to happen?
I'm not really sure at this point. I mean, I'm guessing that Soma's sales rankings might only be indicative of his sales in the area that he was in before. So he might only be, in the middle of the pack or lower in the individual regional ranks, but he's going to show up in, like, all of them. And he's going to make a lot more money that way, and so it'll take people by surprise, maybe.
It's an interesting theory. I feel like it has to play something into the fact that he has a cart and it's moving around.
Obviously he just did, so.
Yeah.
Although I am very curious about the key that he was handing to someone earlier. I mean, that... What the hell is that? But yeah, it's interesting, and it's a different sort of approach that I'm not used to seeing from this series, because in general it's just like, oh, what's someone's plan for his recipe? It's a difference,
He needs to have a larger plan than just what his food is.
Right. So it opens things up more for a different twist, basically, to be had. But yeah, that is Food Wars for this week, so I guess we'll move on to My Hero Academia, Chapter 50. And what a chapter it was! I didn't really think that we would reach this point as quickly as we did. But here we are! It's number 50, Kill 'Em Dead. Which is the idea of killing, I think, in general.
Isn't that Superboy Prime's line? Like, I'm gonna kill you to death!
I'll kill you to death! Yeah. Deku has been training with Gran Torino. It's now the third day of the internship in the evening, and so Gran Torino is kind of scolding him. It's like, you can't just keep on fighting against me. You're going to develop some bad habits because, I'm just using the same tactics against you. And so Deku's like, oh, come on, let's keep training. And Gran Torino says, no, it's time for the actual internship, which means hunting down villains. And so he gets Deku to suit up, and they're going to board the train in order to go to Shibuya, and where apparently there are actually a tremendous number of criminals gathered. There are all sorts of minor crimes that happen there, so Deku will be able to beat up some minor villains. Anyway, Grundy was like, okay, yeah, we're going to take the bullet train there. And so Deku realized, oh, well, that means that we're going to pass by Hosu City. So that gets him thinking about Ida. And then we cut to Ida, who is on patrol with his fin-headed hero guy, whose name I don't even remember if we ever learned.
I don't actually think we did.
So the guy actually eventually says, you know, you're after the hero killer, aren't you? Because, you know, I mean, there's no other reason why you would choose my agency. And, you know, I'm glad that you know, chose me. But, you know, you shouldn't let yourself be motivated by personal grudges. We heroes don't have the authority to make arrests or dole out punishment. It's only because of advances in quirk regulation that we can use our quirks at all. Vigilantism is strictly against the rules. And if you're caught going off on your own, that's considered a major crime. So, very, very, very important, like, don't do this, Ida. He's gonna do it.
Yeah, like, it's very clear, like, everyone's knowing it. Like, even this dude's finally like, you're not just gonna go out and kill this dude you have a grudge on, because I kind of, like, figured out your plan. Like, oh, well, no, totally not. Fingers crossed.
He doesn't even deny it.
He's just like, thanks for the warning.
Yeah. You know, he just clenches his fist and is like, oh, I mean, I've got this urge. You know, what can I do about it, you know?
And I never actually considered, I guess when I always thought anti-hero, I always thought he'd just become a villain in his own right, but I never thought, like, maybe he just becomes like a Batman, like a character who's just ruthless.
Operates outside the law, yeah.
Yeah.
So, also, Stain and Hand on Face Guy arrive via the teleporting of Darkhead Dude, whose name I always forget to. So, Stain is like, I will reform this town, and more sacrifices are needed, and he leaps off on his own in order to continue his work, leaving Hand and Face Guy behind. And so he's like, ah, well, you know, the cities he's appeared in have all seen across the board drops in the crime rate. Some theorize it's tied to an increase in hero awareness. Well, that's great, so much for putting a stop to heroism. Hero killer? More like hero breeder. So he calls to Kurogiri, a.k.a. Dark Head Dude, and he's like, bring out the Nomu! As if I let him get away with stabbing me like that. If he wants to go on a rampage, we'll let him. Which, of course, which of us can cause more destruction? Let's see. I'll crush your pride and dignity, Stain. And monsters come out of the portal.
I like to think that he can't talk like that because he's got a hand over his face, so he's just like, I'll crush your pride and dignity, Stain. What's like, what? And then she, can you move the hand?
No! I don't want to!
Kurogiri!
Yeah?
Bring out the Nomu!
What's that?
Bring out the Nomu!
Teleports you to a volcano? Alright! Just there, I'm like, ah! What a weird plan. I just must not see the genius in it yet.
Sure, he'll be back any moment now.
Probably with lava powers or something cool like that.
Any moment now. So, meanwhile, on the train, Deku is getting a bit worried about Ida because, like, you know, oh, I sent him a text message saying I was gonna be passing through Hosu, and, you know, oh, how are you doing? And he's, like, really worried because he hasn't replied to the text, which makes him sort of seem like, you know, oh, no. Oh, I hope that my crush responds to my text. But I think it's more just a matter of Deku being Deku. Mm-hmm. And also, I guess it's the characteristic of Ida to do things very efficiently and speedily. So, there's that. At that moment, as they're going on the train, a sort of beasts-themed hero just crashes in, apparently having been thrown into it. And so people freak out, and then one of the Nomus appears and just glares at everyone, and Deku, you know, recognizes it immediately, and Gran Torino leaps into action to fight against it, leaving Deku behind on the train as they both, you know, fly outside. And of course, you know, Deku realizes, oh my god, it's Hosu, and you know, there's you know, fire and smoke visible in the background, an explosion going off, and so he freaks out like, oh, Ida. And Ida is being led by his... So the guy's like, oh, I can't move! And Ida appears in front of him, rushes in to attack, and Stain deflects him with a swipe of his sword, knocks Ida's helmet clean off immediately. And so, interestingly, Stain is just like, get out of here. It's no place for children. And is actually, like, willing to let him go. And instead, of course, Ida's not going to take that. You know, he explains, you know, I recognize you. I've been pursuing you, and though I didn't expect us to meet so soon, I am. And Stain, like, is completely unimpressed, flicks the sword up to hold it right up to Ida's nose, and he says, your eyes, you're out for revenge, aren't you? Watch your damn mouth, or your age won't be enough to save you. And Ida is defiant. He says, to save me? So you don't even consider me a threat? Listen up, criminal! I am the younger brother of a hero you attacked, brother to the amazing hero among heroes, and I've come to stop you in my brother's stead. So remember this name for the short time you have left. I'm Ingenium, the hero who's going to take you down.
Woo!
And Stain says, okay, time to die. So, I mean, this was a very eventful chapter. I have a very important moment of breakthrough for Ida, who is now willing to take up his brother's mantle when he wasn't willing to do so back when they were choosing names in class. But Stain seems a little out of his league, doesn't he? So this may not end well for most parties involved.
No, but what would you do if you're in this situation, Nick? Like, your brother's been hurt by this guy, you see him right there, do you just charge right at him?
I don't know. I think that, I mean, I've never had to deal with a situation like that. I mean, I often say, you know, if someone hurts my sister, I'm going to hurt them. But this goes on a scale far beyond that.
Yeah, if someone hurts my sister, unless that person happens to be a superpowered supervillain, then sometimes these things happen. Like, you know, I'm not...
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I'll fight you. I won't try and kill you, though.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely give you some stern looks until you go away. It's like, I saw Taken, the Liam Neeson movie, with my dad, brother, and sister. And as we left the theater, my dad was just like, I just want you to know, Terry, if it happened to you, I'd go as far as Philadelphia to save you, and then I'm out. I live in Harrisburg. Philadelphia is an hour away. He's just like, once you're past Philly, I'm giving up. I was like, well, at least he was honest on that.
Like, I love how travel time is the breaking point.
Yeah, he's just like, if you're that far away, I'm not fine, yeah.
Not like how many people are involved, how many weapons are involved.
Who is it? Is it a terrorist group? Like, just him, like, eh, if it's you've gone past Philly. And I like that he at least told her that, because I get the impression that if it happened to me or my brother, he'd just be like, well, I've got a couple other sons.
And meanwhile, your sister is thinking, let's see, if you had to save my dog or Chris with no legs.
Yeah, both have been kidnapped by terrorists. You can only save one. But they've already shot holes in Christopher's legs, so he can't walk anymore. Which you'd save my dog, right? Like, no!
Oh, God. So, yeah, that was My Hero Academia. Probably, I think, my choice for best chapter this week. There's no Naruto.
That's gone.
In fact, no Nisekoi, no World Trigger. So, yeah, lots of way fewer series, actually, than normal to talk about this week. So instead, we're moving straight into One Piece, Chapter 793, also titled Tiger and Dog. You said on Twitter that you really liked this chapter, didn't you?
Yeah, I've commented before that one of my favorite parts of One Piece are the chapters right after an arc ends, because that's the moment where Oda pulls away from the story of the Straw Hats and tells the larger story of the world of One Piece. Like, you know, that's the place where we first got introduced to, you know, Doflamingo and Bartolomeo, or not Bartolomeo, Bartholomew Kuma. Like, they got revealed, I think it was right after the Alabasta arc. Like, these are the cool chapters that take us away from the main story, show us all these different players in the world, what they're doing, and they're always my favorite because I love seeing the world expand. And we're at this cool point now where We're reaching the end of One Piece, slowly but surely, so the players that are involved are becoming smaller, and we're kind of getting to see things really progress towards an end goal. And I love that stuff. Like, we got so much characterization. This was essentially a chapter about Fujitora, who is someone we have not met before this arc, but we get so much about him from this chapter.
Yeah. The last chapter ended with him bowing and apologizing profusely to King Riku for the failure of the Navy, basically. And so this chapter opens up with, you know, everyone being in shock about this and realizing that, you know, there's a Dendenbushi, a visual Dendenbushi, recording everything and broadcasting it. And so Riku says, come on, raise your head, Fujitora. I mean, do you really want the world to see this? I mean, didn't you choose to not go after Doflamingo just to set this up? And Fujitora says, what I needed was the truth, so I chose to let them do all the fighting. That was my gamble. How could a man who let pirates run wild on innocent folks turn his blade on a warlord of the sea and then act as though he dispenses justice? It was through the actions of pirates, gladiators, and citizens that this country seized victory today. So, turns out he had a bit of a plan going on all along. And sort of his own agenda, basically. Which, of course, does not match the Navy's at all.
Yes.
We also cut away briefly to Kairos, who is congratulating all of the Tantata that were part of the Little Riku army. And he says, you know, we're done. We accomplished all of our goals, so we're disbanding. And so everyone's like, oh, Captain! Yeah! Which, I mean, it was a nice little detail to have.
Yeah. I just want to see if they follow these soldiers then, who are now trying to adjust to a life without war, and, like, the trials and tribulations they go through. Not a lot of them descend into, like, crime or drugs because they've not done anything else to fulfill their lives with. Like, the really sad Tantata, like, gritty realism story. I just started fights because I didn't know how else to go!
The new Dressrosa has a very poor veterans program. Riku kind of whispers over to Tank, and he's like, oh, the Navy has an image to uphold, so take all the pirates and the gladiators who fought for our sake and hide them in the palace. And he also says to send everyone with whose homes have been destroyed to the palace as well. So that palace is going to be mighty crowded, isn't it?
A wee little bit, at least.
Then we cut to the Red Line, Sacred Mary Joa, where powerful people are gathered to talk about shit, basically. There are people who are, basically a lot of them are trying to figure out what's going on, and Aki Inu is like, you know, how does a rat like Doflamingo bend the world to his will? If this kind of nonsense keeps happening on my watch, I'll be a laughingstock of a fleet admiral. I want you to put an end to this at once! And guys in suits basically are like, don't talk back to us, Sakazuki. Your honor is a trifling matter. The Navy is just the outward face of the government.
Have you seen my beard? Yes. And my mustache.
Check out my amazing handlebars. And they actually say that they have placed the matter in Cipherpole's hands. And so, you know, Akinu is challenging them. He's like, come on, the Celestial Dragon's puppet has gone right over your heads. And they're like, oh, shut up.
Fuck you.
And, you know, Akinu, you know, kind of basically refuses to shut up. And he's like, oh, what about Kuzan, then? He's dedicated his considerable power to assisting Blackbeard of all people.
That's a huge deal. Like, I'm having trouble grasping that. Like, of all people, Aokiji's working with Blackbeard? That's not something we've known about before, is it?
I don't think so.
So that's a pretty huge deal.
Yeah, thrown in with another bad guy when it seemed like he kind of had his own thing going on. I guess this is his resort after losing to Aki Inu, though.
Yeah, like, he had no choice. He kind of had to go his own way, but it seems like his own way, he's maybe supporting a much more dangerous... I mean, he probably has his own motivations. It just seems very interesting to find out that's who he's in league with now.
So, he's like, let's see here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Then, at that moment, someone rushes in and informs the elders and Aki Inu that Warlord of the Sea, Don Quixote, Doflamingo, and his family have fallen to the Pirate Alliance of Straw Hat and Law, Dressrosa is in utter ruin. And everyone's like, what? And so, you know, basically, news spreads quickly, causing chaos where it swept like a particularly fierce wildfire around the new world. And so, I mean, basically, the same way that Whitebeard's death caused tremendous waves, Doflamingo's death is having a huge impact on a whole, on tremendous parts of the world. We see a pirate commander being informed that, you know, now they no longer have a source for weapons, so they're no longer able to keep fighting and they've got to surrender.
It actually isn't a pirate captain, it's a king, because they refer to him as Your Majesty, and we see what looks like a shot of an island. So it actually, interestingly, seems to start off with perhaps a tragic story of how this has fallen, where a kingdom might be overthrown because of this.
Yeah, I mean, there was apparently some like sort of rebellion going on because there's like a soldier with a stump for one arm, and he's like, "Oh, the war is ending!" Ah.
Yeah.
And then there is a pirate who is like, "Oh, but we've already paid you your tribute, the deals of the books. You can't do this to us, Joker." And they're like, "Oh, what about our weapons?" And all sorts of different people freaking out, like, "Oh, the devil fruit deal is gone. Oh, what about the smile that we're supposed to have? If only they hadn't shown up." And you see that someone has stabbed both Law and Luffy's faces in the news release. So I think that they might have a few people gunning for them now, maybe. Maybe. Just a little bit. And we also catch up with some of the supernovas as well. Starting off on a rather minor scale, Bonnie stole pizza.
Well, what's interesting about this is that we haven't seen Bonnery in a while, and the last time we saw her, she had been captured by Blackbeard and left behind for a Kondu to find.
Yeah.
So
she managed to get away, it seems.
Yeah. Or they released her.
Or let her go. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard someone theorize that she might be part of the Celestial Dragons, and maybe that's why.
But well, I mean, something's kind of going on with her, because of all of the supernovas, it's clear that she has had the greatest fall from grace and has encountered the hardest times. But even so, she still pops up in these little montages and stuff, acting like she's kind of important, and she's still at large, at least. She may not have her crew or something like that, but maybe she's going to be accomplishing something else. Then we see someone who I don't recognize.
Uroge.
Uroge?
Yes, he was the priest. He was from Skypiea. He was the guy who got really big and muscly when they fought. And apparently that was, I found out after the fact, a devil fruit, that he has some kind of devil fruit that he takes damage and converts that into power. So he gets, like, bigger and stronger. He's the lamest supernova by far, so it's pretty easy to forget about him.
So they're like, "Oh, High Priest Uroge, someone is here!" He's like, "Well, where do you think we are? No one could be here. We're recovering from our wounds on this remote cloud island so that no one can bother..." Boom! So he's in trouble.
Yeah.
Then we cut to smoking beard guy.
Capone.
God, you're good at what these characters do.
He has like the fortress fruit, because all of his men can hide inside of him.
Interesting. I think that the introduction of the supernovas was one of the arcs that I didn't really read very closely when I was catching up. So,
yeah.
But he announces that they are taking Caesar for themselves. So that's an interesting plan.
Yes, which got me very concerned, because I was like, Caesar's with Sanji in their group.
Yeah.
That's a very alarming predicament. Perhaps he's in league with Big Mom, if that's where things are. It'd be interesting to see.
And they announce his location as just being in a certain sea, so, you know, no way of telling if they're close to Sanji's group or not. So.
Yeah.
Then we also see the alliance with Kid and everybody. And,
Hawkins and Apu.
Right.
Scratchman Apu.
So Kid's like, "Oh man, this is quite an upset," basically. If that was part of their plan, it makes their goal clear. And so they're like, "Yeah, they want one of the four emperors, Kaido, King of the Beasts." Well, at least we're not after the same thing. It saves us the trouble of wasting strength on them, for our goal is another emperor, Red Hair Shanks.
Oh, God, another, like, oh, holy shit, wait, these guys are gonna take down Shanks? Like, holy fuck. And there's actually, this is what's, hold on. Oh, never mind, okay, that's killer. I was confused for a moment, I was like, there's four people at the table, one of them looks like a lady, and I was like, oh, wait, that's just Hawkins. He just wears white and has long hair. Very sculpt form.
Then we catch up with...
Actually, hold on. I just think I noticed this. All of them are eating. Like, you know, like, you see kids eating, like, a steak.
Right.
And I don't know, all of them. Killer's slurping spaghetti through the fucking holes in his mask.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that the first time. I was like, is his hair hanging out? And I was like, ew, no, this is somehow worse. How inconvenient must that be, like, to just, like, feed spaghetti through each individual circle? Just take it off, dude.
Then we cut to... He's, like, got an inverse eye patch. You know that?
Good. He has, like, what's the name of the character from Skies of Arcadia? He has one of his things where it's, like, a glass eye patch. He's like... This isn't an eye patch at all. This is half of glasses.
Who is this guy, anyway?
That's, X-Drake. Oh. He was another supernova. We found out he had some connection with, Doflamingo's group. Not Doflamingo, with Kaido's group back in, Corazon's flashback.
Right. So he is, you know, looking over
the news. He has the dinosaur fruit.
He's looking over the news, and they're like, oh, hey, Doflamingo killed your old man? And he just says... It's long in the past. I don't bear him any grudge. And they're like, man, that's cold. Man. Anyway, we've got a report on this big news. Oh, he's really gonna snap. Mr. Kaido, where are you? That idiot Joker went and screwed it all up. We can't get that smile no more. Against a very bizarre image.
It looks like a mountain of a person. Like, I'm curious if this is gonna be like another Gecko Moria or Big Mom, where it's like, oh, here's an antagonist in One Piece who's literally, like, a fucking giant. Like, that weird nebulous, like, kind of giant, but still human thing they do. Mm-hmm. Or if that's supposed to be a structure of some kind that they're calling out to.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's clearly very huge because it's towering over the trees, you can see. But, yeah, it's shrouded in smoke. And it's also interesting, the word choice, you know, where are you? It's like, well, if it were him, he would be right there, so.
Yeah.
Then we cut back to Dressrosa, where Fujitora is getting an earful from the higher-ups. And they're like, oh, you know what you're doing. Oh, you know what it means for a naval admiral to admit fault. Why didn't you report to headquarters first?
And you can tell it's specifically a Kanu, too, because of the eyes.
I freaking love how the Denjinmushi do that. And so Fujitora says, well, if I had done that, I suppose the news would come out and tell a different story again. and he remembers a conversation he had with Smoker, in which, you know, Smoker said that he believed that the Seven Warlords should be disbanded because 2 years ago he was there in person when Crocodile's entire ruse was exposed for what it was. The Navy was helpless to do anything about it. If it weren't for the Straw Hat crew, Alabasta would have sunk to being a pirate nation, just like Dressrosa is now. But the government reported that his downfall was the work of the Navy. If only I had a higher rank back then. And then, with that, we cut over to where Smoker currently is, recovering from all of the shit that happened with, you know, the Caesar Clown and
Punk Hazard, yeah.
Punk Hazard incident. And so he's gotten the news that Dashiki is there with him, and she also brings up their frustration 2 years ago. But Smoker actually says, you know, I couldn't do the same thing even if I had his rank. I'm astonished that Fujitora did that. And so Shiki's like, well, let's see, we have muffins, shall I make some coffee? I said astonished, not famished!
She's got the inverse Daredevil, where somehow her vision's worse, and it made her other senses somehow even more bad.
And then, basically, the rest of her appearance is just, oh, the kids love Dashiki, and the pirates and the Navy crew thinks she's hot. Well, okay then.
Fair enough.
And then we get back to the argument going on between Akainu and Fujitora, and Akainu's just like, we've covered up plenty of things in the past! And Fujitora says, I won't be made a hero on a big fat lie. It was the choice of our superiors in the world government to hire pirates to keep the balance of the world. And Aki was just obsessed with, you know, this is an issue of Naval HQ's trust and dignity. You're out of line. You've caused our justice to lose all face. And Fujitora yells back, if your face is all you cared about, keep it tucked away where it won't get hurt.
Go snizz up.
If admitting fault means your trust is gone, you didn't have none in the first place. And,
all of the Marines are like,
Marines are just like, oh god, we're so fucked, we're gonna die. So Akinu declares, you're gonna make this right, Fujitora. You won't set foot in any naval base in the world until you've brought Straw Hat and Law with you. And Fujitora says, that's just what I wanted to hear. Well.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, does this mean that he wanted to be told to bring in Law and Luffy? Does this mean that he wanted an excuse to do something else? Who knows?
I mean, I could understand if he wanted to bring in Law, because Law is... I mean, I guess at this point it's going to be revoked, but he's still technically one of the warlords.
Right.
So I can understand if he has a grudge against him, he wants to end that program, why he'd want to bring in Law. But Luffy doesn't have that connection, so I wonder if that plays into it at all or not.
Maybe he just perceives him as, like... kind of, you know, necessary in order to capture Law, and maybe he just wanted, I don't know.
He might just be, he's still a Marine, he still wants to put pirates away, like, he still doesn't want that kind of criminal element in the world, so maybe he is, like, I'm gonna clean up my own mess sort of person. You know, he clearly establishes himself in this chapter to be a guy who gets shit done on his own part, like, he wants to get involved in things. And I'm very kind of curious to see where this guy came from, because he was just introduced, you know, recently. And there's still another Marine Admiral out there we still haven't met, the Green Bull.
And, you know, maybe this has to do with, you know, the idea the Smoker had of, you know, abolishing the Seven Warlords. You know, if you have two discredited at once and then captured, that could go a long way towards doing that.
Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that interests me more about anything in this is that in the conversation with the five elders, they note that the word to, you know, whatever thing they did with Doflamingo, where they made it seem as though they took away his warlord power and all that, was on a orders higher than them. I was always under the impression they were the highest order. So it's very interesting to me to find out what's the power above the five elders, because they're referred to as the highest power of the world government.
Maybe they answer to the Celestial Dragon somehow.
I mean, they seem to serve them in some way, but, you know, the only Celestial Dragons we've seen have generally been shitheads. You know, they've just been people who are born into luxury. So I was very curious to find out there's actually, like, a real group of, you know, high-powered figures in the world government who are above even these guys. Because all of these guys are based after real-world leaders. So I always came to the idea that these guys were supposed to be the biggest power behind things, but it's very intriguing to me that there's something even beyond these guys.
Well, I guess we'll see where this goes next time, then.
Yes, very interesting chapter.
All right. Moving on to Toriko, and wrapping up with Toriko, in fact. Gourmet 330, Encounter and Showdown. Blue Grill, the underground clam civilization, basically, it turns out, is even larger than first really estimated, because they have this ecosystem where they raise their own food. You know, their herds are allowed to be free range, and there are dinosaurs there, basically. And Gigi. He's like, oh, this is all thanks to the food spirits, both good and bad. Anyway, let's go to bed.
Alright.
And so he just kind of says, when night falls, you'll understand the secret of this civilization. And then we have poop jokes.
Well, not just poop jokes. There's more jokes. There's
stink a lot of fart jokes.
Peeing jokes.
Yeah.
Smelly jokes.
Yeah.
Ghost jokes. And ghosts aren't so gross, but there's a lot of other stuff.
Shimabukuro, like, has been on some sort of a run here with, like, just gross out humor, isn't he?
And I don't know if he can top the flying poop piss, but...
Yeah. So, anyway, we are introduced to a young lad named Chaco, who is waiting outside the bathroom. And Komatsu comes out, he's like, "Oh, I guess I ate a little too much." And the guy is like, "Oh, what are you doing?" And Komatsu is like, "Where does the poop you flushed down the toilet here go, anyway?" And Chaco's like, "I don't know, I guess it goes to the ocean. Let me in the bathroom, old man." He's like, "Old man." It's
like, my heart.
Oh, it's like, oh, he's almost 29 years old. Which is actually a bit older than I thought he was. But, whatever. He's like, "Oh, don't call me old." And then Chaco pushes past him and he's like, "Oh, get out of my way. I gotta go. I got pissed. Oh, it stinks in there." And Gronk is like, "That's not my poop. The smell is coming from that thing around your neck." And it's just like, "No, it's not. Stop trying to cover up your awfully smelling shits, Komatsu. He would be used to that smell, and he only smelled it when he walked through the door." Fuck off. And then the guy's like, "What is that smelly thing around your neck? Is it a sea urchin? What, you don't know about this? Oops." And he's peed his pants.
Have you ever accidentally peed your pants, Nick? Like, alright, you're not 7 anymore. Like, I guess he is a kid, so I guess it is. But I can't, like, to just unconsciously be like, "Whoops."
I mean, that happened, that only really happens if you've got, like, something wrong with you, you know?
Or if, like, you just reach the point where you're about to explode, like,
right.
You know, you've fucking had it pissed in, like, 17 days or something. Like, it's like, come on, like, how's this kid, they're underwater, can't they pee anywhere? I mean, I know it's, like, a regular place here, but, like, the clam's gonna open its mouth, it's gonna wash it away. It's how the Babylonians did it, I'm pretty sure.
They go to a stream later, you know, and he's just, like, you know, washing the pee out of his pants, and the pee is then flowing down from where the sink is into a river, which presumably eventually flows out to sea, just pissing the stream.
They're like, "Ew, no, the oyster..."
How undignified.
The clam has taste buds, like, that's disturbing.
So, the guy explains to Komatsu, who for some reason followed the kid outside so that he could see him take his pants off. And he's just like, "Oh, I see, so you're a chef from outside." "Yes." "Okay, well, what is that thing?" "This is my talisman called an Unira." Basically, and then this horrible, awful monster suddenly appears out of nowhere and attacks Komatsu. Or it doesn't really attack him, it just kind of goes in his face. And Chaco is like, "The sun is set, we have to go home. Oh, when night falls in Blue Grill, the ghosts come out." "What, you mean like spirits?" "Yes! The powerful smell coming from the Unira is to ward them off." "Oh, okay. Well, I guess there are US people around you." And Chaco's like, "You're not wearing a talisman, you're going to get possessed!" And we briefly pause on this woman wearing, like, a mask, like a kind of a no mask. And then Chin Chin Chin. And Chio and the Master of Pans or whatever, they're like, "Oh, look, it's Warden Love. We've been looking everywhere for you. I'm so glad you're all right." And she turns around. She's also got a no mask on. And it's like, "Who are you?" It's like, it's Love, but she's wearing a mask. Right? I mean, that's not like that's her face. So.
He says, it's like, "Who are you?"
It's like, she's wearing a mask. What's the big deal? And then Tack, I guess is his name, is like, "Come this way." And all the chests are inside. And they're like, "Ah, so these are the food spirits and this is that. And when night falls, they appear." And there's all these, you know, weird spirits floating around. And they're like, "Oh, it's like they're monsters." And it's like, "Yes, there's supposed to be Unira talismans planted around the restaurant, but it seems the food spirits are interested in you." And we're introduced to Seven Shell Chef, Mary. And Mary is like, "Don't worry, so long as you are all alive and well, you won't be possessed by any food spirits. However, the back channel is a whole other story. Unless you're prepared to lose your spirit, then you cannot get to the back channel." And it is, So are they in danger or not?
I've totally forgotten what the point of this place is, like why we're here.
Well, they're supposed to get one of the ingredients.
Another. I know they're here to get another.
Right.
I've just forgotten what the back channel has to do with it and why they're like having like an impromptu fucking cooking tournament.
I don't know. So Mary is like, even if you're prepared, if you lack the cooking skills, you won't be allowed to enter through the gate, and it will be us who are inconvenienced if you end up possessed. Chef Gigi. Don Slime has also given his consent. Understood. Gigi's like, yes, do as you'd like. And Mary is like, I'd like to see your skills for myself. And so I'm going to have to challenge our country's top chefs in a cooking match. Select 5 chefs to represent your group. If you lose, you will give up on any plans to go to the back channel, and your opponent shall be the 5 Ten Shell Masters. And here are a page and a half dedicated to showing you their faces and nothing else. The match is tomorrow!
Well, we get their faces and their hilariously wacky names. Condor Window, Picnic Bomber, Cocky No Quiche, Asardi, and May May.
Picnic Bomber is my favorite.
I like Cocky No Quiche.
That's also pretty great. Mari's like, the match will be tomorrow at Grill Stadium. Meanwhile, Charlie's like, I forgot my underwear! So that's
the stupid end of the chapter. I hate this kid. Like, you know that fucking I know there's a name for it, like the Cousin Oliver character, like the young kid who just shows up in the middle of a fucking story and they're like, this kid's gonna be like, you know, he's like, look how cute and wacky he is. I'm just like, I fucking hate you and everything you stand for.
Like Justin from the Power Rangers.
It's not quite, because that was a whole new cast eventually.
The son from Mummy Returns.
Yeah. Like, it's just like, yeah, the kid. Like, the cousin Oliver is like the most infamous one, where you're just like, why do we have a fucking, like, what, because the youngest Brady kid isn't cute enough anymore? Like, just this
Scrappy
fucking...
Scrappy-Doo.
Yeah, a little bit of Scrappy-Doo. Like, just this fucking little kid character who shows up is gonna be wacky. I'm just like, I hate you. I hope you piss yourself every week. Fuck you.
Also, Flim Flam from also Scooby-Doo.
Flim Flam?
He was in the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. He was called Flim Flam because he was a child con artist, basically.
Oh, God, yes, that exactly.
With
holy
the weird,
shit.
With the yellow hoodie.
Yeah, now I'm seeing a picture of him. Yeah, that's that. Pretty much that exactly. Like, oh, hey, look, it's a little fucking kid character. Fuck you.
Also, why is Daphne the smart one? What happened to Velma?
Was Daphne not in that one?
No,
Velma?
The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo had Flim Flam, Scrappy, Scooby, Shaggy, and Daphne.
What a weird team.
Yeah. You know, just replace Freddy and Velma, the two people who made all the plans in the series prior to that, with Scrappy and Flim Flam.
With Scrappy, Flim Flam... and the character who exists primarily to get captured.
And they turned Daphne into, like, the smart one by necessity. Because it weren't going to be Scooby or Shaggy or Scrappy or Flim Flam.
Oh, my God. I love, like, spontaneously intelligent Shaggy. Like, he still talks like a fucking stoner, but he's just like...
Like, listen up, gang. So we've got to construct, like, a... like a quantum converter so that we can catch the ghost.
Holy shit! This is real fucking advanced. He makes Velma look like a fucking idiot. He's like, alright, have you all seen Bioshock Infinite? Basically, it's gonna be like that.
Reggie, what's Bioshock Infinite? It's like a video game that comes out in like 25 years, Scoob.
Anyway, hold on.
When I travel to the future in my time machine. But anyway.
Hold on, give me just a moment here. I'm gonna take a hit of this bonk. Ah! Alright, so the quantum entangler needs to be placed over there.
I've discovered that the one impression that we can both do is Shaggy Rock.
You do Shaggy 1,000 times better than me. He needs to become like a character you start just adding into things. Cause holy shit, I felt like I was in the room. I felt like I was an 8-year-old back in the room watching Scooby-Doo again.
I'll keep that in mind in case of Case and Shaggy. Anyway, that's going to do the manga recap. We went into some weird places this episode in order to make up for having fewer series, But I'm glad that we got to do it, because, I mean, you were talking about, like, we might have had to cancel this week.
Yeah.
So, glad you were able to tough out the headache. And, yeah. So, anyhow, we will be back, hopefully next week, back on twitch.tv/RolloT. I think that we're going to have to do it on a not Wednesday again. I'll have to double check on that. Normally, however, we do it on 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/RolloT. But make sure to follow us both on Twitter so you can stay updated on our streaming schedule. He is at RolloT and I'm at YRulerOfTime. Also, be sure to check out all of our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. You can also check them out on iTunes. And if you go on iTunes, make sure to subscribe, leave a criticism, leave a rating, because that helps out the algorithm and helps us to beat the woodworkers.
Yes, we actually have one. And I had it opened, and then I closed it to download a Frasier podcast. So you have to give me a moment while I open this back up here. But we did get one, and I wanna specifically call it out. Let me just grab this. And also, by the way, for anyone who reviews our podcast outside of the U.S., I'm not ignoring your reviews. I can only see the U.S. store. I believe there are ways that I can look it up, but I don't know how to do that quite yet. So once I do, I'll give everybody proper credit. Like the Dr. 14, who says, normally I don't edit my comments, but the WMR are by far my favorite F-minus graded podcast of all time. Whether it's reviewing some of my favorite chapters, introducing myself to new series, or getting updates on the status of Dead and Never Coming Back, Una Hanez. So thank you very much, Dr. 14.
Also, thank you to Steve Mann, our title cards. You can check out his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com, eyedropboops.tumblr.com, and patreon.com/Steve Mann. Special thanks as well go out to The Infamous Planet, as well as Felix Dark, for the visual editions of our podcast. And if you criticize me again for getting the name of your channel wrong, it redirects to the same one. Shut the fuck up. Okay.
So angry. Fuck you.
It's YouTube Goku. It's just the same thing.
Oh, shit, now you're doing it. This is awesome.
I'm imitating your impression.
Oh, it's me. It's Infamous Planet.
All British people sound like this, even though I have heard Infamous Planet's videos, and he sounds much more normal.
No, he sounds like some wacky Cockney thing. It would be like if you did an impression like me, and you made me some Boston person.
Like, honestly, like, his British accent is, like, way more subtle than Gav's, so...
I know. Gav, sometimes I feel like I can get away with doing that voice for him, because I'm like, hey, it's the moments where it's just like, oh, come on, I'm going to buy my Warhammer figurines, but...
I'm making a Gundam mold today.
But my thing with Infamous...
That's Australian!
My thing with Infamous, though, is he says, like, British phrases so much more frequently than it works, because he's just always like, oh, I can't be bothered to do this. Bloody hell. Fucking US has ounces. I don't know what an ounce is. Bugger all. Brick shit house.
And, of course, if you want to say something angry to us, remember our email address is weeklymongrecap@yahoo.com. You can send a criticism of our show, ask a question that we'll answer on a later edition of the podcast, or suggest a manga for us to review sometime in the future. So, that is going to do it. Hopefully next week we'll have Biomega. Thank you everyone for listening.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. I don't... trying to think of... Nick, do you have any closing words from Shaggy to send us on our way?
Like, listen, I know that everyone likes to experiment occasionally, but I like to just stick to the normal Mary Jane. You know, if you try some of the harder stuff, you're gonna get fucked up, man.
True words to live by, kids.